Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's episode of the Bombercast. I'm Bonser 34, and I am joined, as always, this week by the Grizz. And Grizz, it's always nice to come off a bye and head into a week nice and refreshed.
Yes, a bye. Look, it must suck to lose 11 straight grand finals like North have. So probably pay due respect, maybe. No, probably not. But
I
look,
think all 13 of their fans are probably devastated about it. But yeah, you know, I'm sure they had a good time at the footy on Sunday.
Yeah, look, they probably did for the first half. A game that sort of went sort of as I think we discussed last week, in that, you know, North were up for the fight early, as they always are against us. And
to be fair, I think that was mainly you. I think I just sat here and said North are shit, and I think I've carried on the same way at the start of this podcast.
Look, I was trying to include you in it and sort of forget that, but that's fine. Yeah, but yeah, North came to play. They're under the pump. I think that's, what, 10 straight losses to start of the year, the first time that's happened in a long while, and they always go up for this matchup. They came ready to play. They end up belting us in clearances, which is actually sort of our one wood this year, but they couldn't sustain the effort for long enough, and I think our game on the outside was too good. But look, we'll get stuck to the game, but I think when you look at the other results on that same day, getting away with a 40-point win probably wasn't too bad.
No, so I do just quickly want to say, other than us winning, the funniest result I have seen in a very long time happened over Adelaide Oval. I'm not a Port Adelaide man. I'm good friends with a number of Adelaide supporters, so Port Adelaide are not one of my favourite clubs. But geez, they came close to being my second team on Sunday. That was fantastic.
Yeah, well, we might touch on that at the end of the game review, considering that seemed to be a far more interesting game than ours was for the majority. Because, look, North were up for, I suppose, about a quarter of the game. I think they led for 24 minutes in total. I can't remember what those 24 minutes were. They might have been the first 24 minutes when they jumped us with an early goal. But
yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, but I never felt like the game was an issue. I think North were either scoring cleanly from clearance or from really cheap turnovers by us. There are some umpiring decisions which were riling up the fans. But
unbelievable. Todd Goldstein being run into by a player from North Melbourne who was not the ruckman at a ruck contest, has been a free kick for about 3 years now and is the easiest free kick as an umpire to pay. And yet it happened twice and got blown play on twice. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, look, I know the free kick count isn't the measure to be used. The free kicks were the weirdest thing for me was what wasn't getting called as opposed to what was called, which is probably your point. But I tend to think that blaming the umpires is a loser mentality to begin with. We were a far better team. I think in that third quarter when we decided we're just going to put our foot down and to hell with what North did, we sort of outscored them by about six goals. We went from leading by seven to 45 points. And in that period, we really we evened up the clearances. And that was really the key to the game. As soon as we evened up the clearances in that third quarter, basically for that 15-minute stretch, North didn't have any answers for us. And they were playing a really basic defensive stretch setup. It was basically back shoulder, all six guys. And after the centre bounce, they were sending a spare back to let Luke McDonald run free, but it was a really basic defensive setup. And with the amount of ball we're getting through the middle, sort of, you know, in that second or third quarter, Peter Wright was getting all he wanted on the lead against the debutant Will Fordham. And yeah, Aiden Corr, who was much maligned on our board, did a pretty good job on Kyle Langford, I thought. But what was your big takeaway from the game, Bonser?
Yeah, so we really did just have that sort of 12-minute burst in the third quarter. We banged on five goals and all of a sudden it was sort of game over. But I think I sort of agree with you in that it never really felt like North were on top of us or they were really challenges. They sort of just... Clarko this year, and he did it again on Sunday, just puts numbers behind the ball. He just floods. And that's all he's... That's been his tactic this year. And it's not a tactic that works anymore. It's not round 21, 2000, Rodney Eade pulling it against the undefeated Bombers and shocking the world because it was something that we'd never seen before. Clubs are aware for that now, that they prepare for it. And that's the problem. So Clarko can put 20 or 18 blokes behind the ball as much as he wants, but eventually the dam wall is going to break. And that's what we saw on Sunday, was that dam wall broke, and it only broke for probably 15 minutes, but it's enough because if you've got 18 blokes behind the ball, you don't score yourself. And that's exactly what happened. So Yeah, look, I'm facetious when I say all 13 of their members, because let's be honest, there's about 37 of them there, so that was good. But it just, if I was a North fan, I'd be disappointed because there's just no way they're going to win games like that. I mean, they might beat Richmond at the moment, who we have coming up this week, and we'll talk about their injury list as part of the preview. But other than that, I just don't see how they're going to be able to kick a winning score with the tactics they used on Sunday.
Yeah. Look, the game was being, like I said, they were basically trying to score directly from clearance or from cheap turnover.
Yep, exactly.
And if they scored from, if they got the ball from this in the clearance, which they're getting a lot, they absolutely pumped us in clearance.
It's, I think they've done that before, though. Isn't that normally what happens for us versus North?
Well, that's what I said last week. Like, every time we play them, it seems like they absolutely belt us in clearance, but then as soon as we get the ball back, we run straight past them. And that's exactly how the game seemed to go. And like you said, with the in that second quarter, they were throwing numbers behind the ball. They would win the clearance and just throw them behind the ball. But at some point, you've got to score. And as soon as they started evening up numbers around the ground, that's when the space opened up for Peter Wright and Matt Guelfi and Jake Stringer and guys forward or centre. But other than we'll get into some individual players. I didn't think anyone from the midfield stood out particularly just because we got belted at clearance so much. And it was probably a lot of our halfbacks, Nick Martin, Andrew McGrath, Mason Redmond, got a lot more of the ball in transition than our mids did just because of the way the game was played. But I thought Peter Wright was really good. He had the game you'd expect him to have against a debutant, playing back shoulder on him most of the game.
Yep.
Kicked four goals too. Yeah, he kicked four goals too, took a lot of marks, presented really well, chopped out in the ruck fine. I love that forward line set up better without the two rucks. And he played pretty well. Him and Matt Guelfi, basically, who Matt Guelfi quietly becoming one of our most important players forward or centre, considering what he does both negating-wise and kicking goals, both had really good games.
Yeah, so Guelfi kicked 3-3, so he really could have gone to town and banged home, you know, six goals against North. The thing I like about our forward line, because you touch on the fact that Langford was fairly quiet, is he was quiet, but it didn't matter because everyone else stood up. The other thing that I liked was Harry Jones. He only kicked one goal, but he had another chance to score from around the corner, which he kicked across the face. I was concerned when Wright came back that our forward line would get in each other's way, but that doesn't appear to be happening at the moment. Sometimes Wright and Jones are in the same spot, but they each seem to be getting at least, you know, one look a quarter or a couple of looks a quarter. So I think Langford had even had a couple where if he just held a mark, you'd expect him to hold normally. He probably could have kicked, you know, two or three goals instead of the one that he kicked. So I think for me, it's pleasing to see our forwards each get a crack so that nobody's really been held out of the game at the moment.
Yeah, I think both Langford and Jones did a really good job of recognising the matchup that Wright had, because Jones was up on the wing a lot, presenting, providing that conduit option. And Langford did a lot of leading out to the flanks with Core. I just noted Langford, whenever he got the ball, wasn't really through the middle of the ground. It was sort of out the sides or at the flanks. It wasn't only until the sort of end of the game where he got a bit more corridor. But what that did is it sort of isolated that debutant Will Fordham on Peter Wright, who just had his way. And so that's a sign of a forward line that's working really well when they're sort of acting sacrificially in that sense. And highlighting or isolating matchups which they know are going to favour them. And I thought our ball use going inside forward centre was touch and go at times, but there were some really good entries that took advantage of it. And I thought our defence, for the most part, stood pretty tall. Like we said, there were some very interesting decisions, let's say, by the umpires at different points further at the ground, which left them isolated one-on-one. And any time, you know, you leave guys isolated one-on-one, you're going to lose sometimes and you're going to create overlap, which is what happened. But I thought, you know, it was probably a C-plus game for the team as a whole over the course of the entire day. But when you consider, you know, Melbourne lose to West Coast and Port get by the skin of their teeth by Hawthorn, there's something in the air. So to come away with a 40-point win probably wasn't a bad result.
Yeah. The one thing I do just want to touch on for our midfield is I actually thought Jai Caldwell stood out. So I was at the ground on Sunday and sitting up in the stands, and he just to me seemed to always be there. I mean Merritt had a quiet day, as you pointed out, and as did a number of other midfielders, but I just thought Caldwell stood out for me and had a lot of really good disposals going inside the forward 50. So again, it's probably pleasing because You'd argue he's in our second tier midfield, so he's not, you know, he's not a Merritt and he's not a Parrish and he's not one of the top end players we have, but he's still very, very handy. And I think he's starting to reflect where he went in his draft, because GWS took him with a fairly high draft pick.
I think it's pick 11 for GWS, and just to
which was ours originally. I think that's, was it Shield or Smith?
Aiden Bonner was the year we traded for Shield, and then the next year was Jai Caldwell.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Neither of them are currently on GWS's list, so who knows how that will. But just to emphasize your point, Jai Caldwell had 9 clearances, which was equal high with Tom Powell, who was really good for North. I thought Tom Powell.
Tom, never heard of him.
Tom. Jai Caldwell had 9. Clearances. The next best for the Essendon was Jake Stringer, Archie Berger, Zach Merritt, and Dyson Hebble, who all had 2. So he had literally 4 times as many clearances. Yeah. And that's probably a sign of why we lowered our colours, was in the clinches, or sort of Jai Caldwell and no one. I think I've been labelled as a Parrish apologist previously, but you just see what happens when Darcy isn't there. They can really key in on Zach as a sort of like that clamp target. And Liam Scheel went to him and just wore him like a glove all day.
His rumors that Zach was sick too, just to throw that out there.
Sure, but you could tell that they were really paying attention to him in the clinches. Like they made the decision, and it's a smart decision, by the way, that no matter what happened, they weren't going to get beaten by Merritt. They would let the other midfield beat them, and that's a smart play by North, really. But unfortunately for them, even if they won the clearances, I think we still won the contested possession. Which seems a bit crazy when you think about, like, so they were winning first touch, but anywhere else around the ground, Essendon came up with Trump. So, look, a C+, you take the win. I don't think we had any major injuries. There's a Sam Darren rolled ankle, but they expect him to play. There was suspension of Harry Jones, which I hate that suspension.
Unbelievable.
I hate that suspension, but you're not going to beat it, which is...
No, so you look at the James Sicily one last year, where Sicily basically got... I think he got 2 weeks for nearly the same thing, because the bloke was concussed, whereas Jones gets the one because he got up and played. So you're right. It's just the lack of consistency, because there was the one there where the one that came out of the weekend that's really given me the shits with the MRO and the umpires is the one in that third quarter there where Goldstein and Zeri are over on the half forward line for North, and Zeri ends up running and contesting the ruck for himself. And the reason was he gave Goldstein the old tummy tap, and so Goldstein went down.
Yeah, that was bizarre. Probably
a little soft by Todd to go down the way he did. Or, you know, not saying tummy taps are fun, but he did seem to bounce. I think he was almost playing for a free kick a little bit, just to put some mayo on it. But did we not see Mason Redmayne get done for a tummy tap earlier in the year because a punch off the ball is not a footballing act? So how the fuck does that not get called?
Well, Mason Redmayne didn't get done for a tummy tap. He got done for a chin tap.
Yeah, chin tap. Sorry, chin tap. Yeah. Still, he got done for the whack off the ball, which we got told wasn't a football act. How's this a football act? How is this not at least got?
Well, it should
financial
be
financial sanction.
It should at least be a fine, because Mason Redmayne got done in for was it's off the ball. It's intentional because it was off the ball. It was high contact, which is literally high as in hit his head and low impact. So it should have just been low contact to his stomach, low impact off the ball. It probably should have been a fine, but, you know, that was bizarre. But my issue with the sling tackles at the moment is they're never paying holding the ball. So you have to hold the tackle for longer, and that's where guys are going to get swung into the ground. Now, the players have done an incredible job adapting, in a sense that we see way less sling tackles this year than we have previously, but they've got to fix this holding the ball issue, because the guys are having to hold tackles for longer, which means they're trying to bring guys to ground. And the more times you bring people to ground, the statistics, just it's a weight of numbers. People are going to get their heads hit the turf. And so I feel really sorry for Harry. I don't think it was intentional, but the way the tribunal sort of written at the moment, I know Brad Scott's basically said it today, is whatever the MRO gives you, it's almost impossible to argue it down, which seems very bizarre, but that's just how it works.
It is, and I agree with you. I just don't think this is a case where they'd blown the free kick. I think it was a free kick to Harry, but I think he was already slinging. The way he was rolling around, I'm not too sure, even if they'd blown earlier. I still think it probably would end up being a sling tackle, but I do agree there was some bizarre decisions paid on the weekend, and they are not paid holding the ball quick enough. But We'll move on from the broken, poxy little club that is North Melbourne and move to the broken down Tiger Army. So they're more of a platoon at the moment, the Tiger Army. They have disappeared in droves, the fans, as you can imagine after three flags in a row. Some of them, well, three in 4 years, sorry. Some of them are still probably out celebrating somewhere and haven't realised that the world has continued to spin. But I don't know about you, Chris, but I reckon if I take my boots on Saturday night to the MCG, I could get a call up for Richmond. That is how short they are at the moment.
We're a chance, mate. We are a chance. But
I could go sit in a forward pocket and kick it. I reckon I've always thought I could sit in a forward pocket in the AFL and kick a couple of goals. Just put me down there because they'd be able to hit me somehow. I'll just stand there and not move. And when my opponent will run off me because he'll look at me and go, well, you're a middle-aged, overweight man who can't run, so I'll go and get 400 kicks. And if I just stand in the goal square, eventually I'll get a Joe the Goose.
Yeah, so they've got 13 players unavailable this weekend with another five on a test. And the five tests are Liam Baker, James Rosier, Sam Banks, Seth Campbell, and Jacob Bauer. Now, one of those players in Liam Baker you would take as best 22. The other four, even if they're fit, probably aren't ready to play in terms of the development and health anyway. I think I read yesterday that they have 25 players to pick from this week, which is...
It's West Coast Eagles level.
Oh, it's horrendous. Yeah, no. So, like, regardless of where you think Richmond's list is at when fit, there's no way you can make a judgment on that football club at the moment. Adam Uzay has walked into a hornet's nest of a coaching job, not because of any other reason, but the fitness of his players. Like, it's... And so many long-termers too. You got Jack Ross and Maurice Rioli, who are the only ones slated. Like, you got three knee reconstructions. You've got
Sam Smith is the most unluckiest man in the AFL at the moment. Well,
yeah, second only to Alex Johnson historically, probably. But
and you'd probably, if you were Sam Naismith's doctor, you'd probably be just tapping him on the shoulder and saying, mate, you need to start thinking about life after football because you've got to be able to walk.
If you're Sam Naismith's mate, you slap him across the face, just ask him what the hell he's doing. But, like, we've never been AFL footballers, so we don't know the lore of that lifestyle. But, yeah, they're in serious trouble, Richmond, in terms of their list. The results of the last, really, month are not surprising. They've been battered from pillar to post. Let's be honest, the Bulldogs are one of the best front-running teams in the competition. You know, once they get ahead, they run. And Brisbane's always a tough road trip. So they've had a rough couple of weeks. Richmond, and it's probably not looking like getting any better playing us, although we have shown against West Coast and against North Melbourne that we'll give you a chance for the first half hour if you let us. So,
but much like North Melbourne, I just don't think Richmond are good enough to take the chance. I think if we don't belt them, so if we don't put 15 goals past them, it'll be like the North game where they're with us for a couple of quarters. Everyone in the match day thread will melt down. Then we'll bang on six quick ones and she'll be all over. And we'll have forgotten about it come the final siren because we're still second on the ladder and loving life.
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to belt North Melbourne, but we should be belting Richmond. And the only reason we don't is because Essington arrives and Richmond gets the tail up because it's stream time at the G and it's a big game. It's one of the only marquee slots I'll have this year. They just get up for it. But I think this is a game where... You know, against West Coast and against North, I was like, I'm not sure we're going to absolutely belt these teams. We're not there yet. Regardless of where we're at, where Richmond at, they should not get within 7 to 8 goals. We should note that Nate Caddy will be making his debut after another solid game on the weekend. I think he kicked two against. That's 3 or 4 weeks of really solid form. He's our first debutant this year. I'd have to crunch numbers. This might be the latest we've ever had to have a debutant into a season, but really exciting, obviously, with Harry Jones out. That's the position he'll take.
Yeah, it's good. Look, I probably would have preferred to have seen Nick Bryan, but I'm pretty biased. I think I've been calling for Nick Bryan's inclusion for the last 3 years, so nobody will be surprised by that. But yeah,
is there a chance we see Nick Bryan anyway? I think there is. Todd Goldstein looked absolutely wrecked on the weekend.
Yeah, maybe. Look, I think there's a bit of concern about him going up against Dan Curvis, which I kind of get. If I was Essendon, I would probably – well, I mean, it doesn't get any easier next week either because you go up against Jared Witt. So what do you want to do? Do you want to play him against Nank? Do you want to play him against Witt? Because I was thinking about the travel, the Goldstein to the Gold Coast. Maybe we give him the week off and tell him to stay in Melbourne next week while we all go to the Gold Coast. So, yeah, it's a tough one. Is there any played well on the weekend. He took the chocolates against Gold Team. I thought he butchered a lot of his disposals. I didn't think he was that good, to be honest. I mean, I thought he won the battle against Goldie, but I came out of that game and read Goldie's thread and was surprised at how one-sided everyone saw the battle, because I didn't think it was as one-sided as was described, but maybe I was just missing it at the stadium. So, yeah, it's tough because you're not really getting any easier, Nank versus Witt. So, yeah, maybe we see Brian this week. I think we definitely see him in the next 2 weeks anyway.
Yeah, this is probably a discussion for another day, probably the buy about this sort of epidemic of ruckman taking the ball out of the ruck and just banging it forward. I think it's the most underrated clearance in the game because they barely really turn into anything, as we saw half of Tristan Sherry's on the weekend. So
unless you're Sam Draper and you take it out of the ruck and then run 20 metres, take a bounce and kick it on your left foot for a goal.
Or you're Sammy Draper and you take out the ruck.
No, we're positives. We're positives. We're not negatives. We're positives, Greece. Come on.
Sorry. Again, I'm starting to... Yeah, okay. We won't go negative. I think this is a game... Like, Richmond have really struggled at stoppage. They've struggled centre clearance, general clearance.
They've struggled in general.
They've struggled in general, but particularly, like, they've never, even in their heyday, they're never great at clearance.
No, they weren't. They were very much a turn it over on the half back line and then just scrub it forward and get goals that way.
Yeah. And they went and tried to address that with Hopper and Taranto, but they just haven't been able to get those two fit at the same time. And it's Dusty or nothing at the moment. I think if Sam Durham plays, you'd think he goes straight to Dusty. As a defensive matchup, Sam's done an excellent job of that. And so has Jai, to be honest, in terms of clamping down on that midfielder for them and running attacking the other way. I think that's going to be the key because the defense is undermanned on top of their injury list. I think they're missing Grimes. Nathan Broad's really the only experienced defender for them back there. If we can isolate Kyle Langford and Peter Wright and Nate Caddy on their defenders, I think we're a chance of really kicking a score on them. But I think the key to this game will, if we can have a really strong first quarter, we put on 6 or 7 goals or something like that in a quarter and really just blow it out of the water early, I think they'll go a long way. Because if we give Richmond a sniff, we know that we won last year. They've got the wood over us overall and we don't want to be giving them any confidence going into the second half or the rest of the game.
Yes, so my ins and outs here. I've got Nate Caddy's come in. Obviously, Jones goes out. I have gone with Reed coming in. I'm of the opinion that he's played 2 VFL games. If he's fit, let's bring him in, which, of course, would see Laverde go out. I think he's still the odd man out for that back line, so I have Reed coming in for him. I have Jordan Ridley coming in, obviously. I think, again, he's played at least 1 VFL game. Quality player, he dominated that with his limited time. So he comes in, and then I have Nick Cox returning to the side. I do have Dylan Scheel heads out for Nick Cox because that was just a change. And then it's a toss-up. I've got Ben Hobbs going now. I do just want to quickly touch on Hobbs and even Scheel a little bit, and probably Sardis as well. So Sardis, I think, got up around the ball a little bit more, which was good for him. Hobbs is on a hiding to nothing for me at the moment because he's playing that half-forward role, which he's clearly just not suited to do. So quite a few times on Sunday when I was sitting at the stadium, I was watching his running patterns and he'd run. You could see in his head he was thinking, I have to get to the drop of the ball. I have to get the drop of the ball on the forward line. The problem is he's running to where the forward is leading before the leading forward gets there, if that makes sense. So he's not getting to the drop of the ball. He's sitting in the hole dragging his man back to make it a contested mark. So someone like Langford coming out in the lead, instead of having to just deal with the bloke behind, now has to deal with somebody in front. And there were quite a few times on Sunday that Langford especially, Hobbs would run back and Langford's pointing at him, gesturing wildly, basically telling him, get the hell out of the space. You're here too early. So it's tough for Ben at the moment. But unfortunately, I don't see anybody else to come out for him. Maybe Davey, but yeah, I mean, at least Davey kicked a goal, I guess.
Yeah. I'll respond to those things systematically. In terms of your ins and outs, I don't think there's any chance we bring both Ridley and Reed in.
Come on.
Yeah, no, but you look at their forward line they played last week. They've got literally one tall forward. It's Noah Bolter, and that's it. And McKelty Lafau, who's really a medium. He's 189, so he's not really a tall. So you're playing Mackay, Reed and Ridley? I don't think so. I think you might, if anything, you might just bring in Ridley to play with Mackay as that medium tool, and out goes Laverty. You swap Shield for Cox if you want to, and that gives you the flexibility to have an extra tool if you want it. But generally speaking, you don't want to go too tall against Richmond, because that's one way they can get you if they're fast along the ground. In terms of Hobbs, I've said it a few times on the board. At this point, I'd rather him go down to VFL with Elijah Sartis whenever everyone's fit, and just have a 10-week period, 5-6 week period, more if required, of just getting regular on ball minutes. Because that's, if he plays in our team, that should be where it is. Honestly, it shouldn't be on the half forward flank. We've got enough half forwards, I think, now that we can spare him in the midfield. And I actually, this is going to be really unpopular, I would rather Shiel in his position than Hobbs, because at least Shiel has the motor and the speed as that high half forward to get up the ground and use his pace going back the other way. And he's got enough smarts, I think, as a half forward from the time he has at GWS to not get in Langford's way. So I would almost rather Shiel in that position than Hobbs, and let Hobbs just get 80-90% midfield at VFL level and work on his craft. Because if he breaks into the team, that should be where it is, as a genuine in and under midfielder whenever Darcy or Zach or Caldwell or Durham aren't fit.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So who's your final tip then this week, Chris? Give us your tip and give us your unexpected player of the game.
Okay, so my tip, I don't think it should go without saying, it'll be us, I think. I think that Essendon will win. I think this should be an 8-goal margin. This should be 50 points plus. My player of the game is not going to be unexpected. I think Zach Merritt's most likely, just because they haven't got a midfield to go with him. But I think if you want me to go unexpected, I think Matt Guelphy kicks 5.
But again, that's not very unexpected. So look, I've obviously tipped us as well. And my unexpected player of the game, I will say that Nate Caddy will break John Coleman's record of 12 goals on debut, just to really go.
Oh, wow.
That will do us for this week. We'll see next week if my Nate Caddy 13 goal prediction comes true. Thank you again for joining, everybody. And as always, please like, subscribe, and tell all your friends.